Hey, I'm Johanna Wagstaff.
And hi there, I'm Rohith Joseph.
And we're asking for 10 minutes of your day to go through the 10 things that the UN recommends we can all do when it comes to climate change.
Please don't leave.
No.
And also, the things aren't new.
We are just wired to not do them.
We promise you to help you figure out your brains, and you and your people can make better choices to combat climate change.
10 Minutes to Save the Planet is available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast. A warning that in this next segment, we will be talking about explicit content, teens, and sex.
I first heard about choking in, 2019. I would say, when TikTok, first started to, get going. It was, very, soon as, I got into TikTok. It'll be, a guy pointing at, the ceiling, and then he'll edit in, a text that says pretty much, saying that girls like to be choked, or, when they choke you, or, when you choke them, their face when you choke them. Also, there would be a lot of girls in the comments being like, yeah, I love when that happens. I love when that happens. Or, the choke me daddy trend was very, it wasn't really a trend. It was just, a term of phrase, I would say, a lot amongst, young girls, when they would see a hot guy, they'd be like, oh my god, choke me daddy. And it's you're 13 years old. You're 13 years old and you're saying that. It's kind of bizarre.
This teenager was also 13 when she first came across memes with the hashtag choke me daddy on social media. She's now a senior in high school in Vancouver. We're not using her name because she worries that this could impact her finding a job or her safety at school. A heads up, there is explicit language in her next comment.
The way guys describe sex with girls is very, degrading and very, it's almost we're not really human. We're kind of dehumanized in a way. We're not referred to as girls. It's kind of we're referred to as bitches or hoes or sluts even. And it's specifically with rough shit. I've heard some guys talking about slapping girls in the face, they'll slap them or they'll spit on them, and then they'll be they like that though.
Researchers who track sexual behavior say what was once a niche practice has gone mainstream, and pop culture references to choking or sexual strangulation are popping up in the content that teenagers are consuming.
Now, if it was a normal day, Maddie would have just taken off her hoodie. But since Nate choked her, Maddie woke up 3 hours early, applied more concealer than a burn victim, and tried her best to cover up.
Spank me, pull my hair. Choke me, spank me, pull my hair. Choke me, spank me, pull my hair.
I'm vanilla, baby. I'll choke you, but I ain't no killer, baby.
From the hashtag Choke Me Daddy to TV shows like Euphoria and hit songs like Jack Harlow's Lovin' On Me, this normalization of choking in the sex lives of teenagers has researchers raising the alarm. Debbie Herbenick is a researcher and professor at the Indiana University School of Public Health and director of the Center for Sexual Health Promotion in Indiana. She's also the author of a new book, Yes, Your Kid, What Parents Need to Know About Today's Teens and Sex. Debbie, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me here.
Thank you for being here. When we talk about rough sex and teens, and we just got a sense of that, what are we talking about exactly?
The behavior that we're talking about most often is sexual choking, which is actually a form of strangulation, even though nearly everyone calls it choking. But it's a form of strangulation because it involves external pressure to the neck, using one or both hands, sometimes a forearm, sometimes an object like a belt or a cord or so on, to press or squeeze against the neck. So that reduces airflow and or blood flow to the brain. There are other behaviors too, though, that are part of rough sex. There's smothering. There is slapping of the face, slapping of the genitals, slapping of the breast or torso. There's name calling, which some people describe as at least as hurtful as some of the physical stuff because the names can be really degrading. So rough sex refers to a whole constellation of behaviors that over the past roughly 15 years have been considered more normalized and mainstream among young people.
You did a survey of college students. What did you find?
We found that around 80% of those with any kind of partner reported engaging in rough sex.
80%?
80% for some kind of rough sex, which is huge. And even more concerning to me is that about 2/3 of the women report having been choked or strangled during sexual activities. So far higher than we ever could have imagined for a behavior that a couple decades ago was probably something that only about 1% of people engaged in.
Can I ask you about the title of your book, Yes, Your Kid? What does that phrase mean in the context of what you just said?
Yeah, you know, that phrase is a way to try to communicate to folks that we all need to be paying attention to this. For too long, when I would be doing, you know, my research and talking with friends and colleagues and parents, and they would be concerned about the data that I was sharing, but they would so often say things like, yeah, you know, I'm so lucky because, you know, my kid, of course, is really just interested in sports, or that must be really hard for those other families. And no one seemed to really grasp that these trends were becoming so very prevalent that it wasn't necessarily enough, right, that your kid was involved in extracurriculars or, you know, was somehow staying out of these things. Because whether or not they're doing them, they are most likely aware of them. Their friends are most likely talking about them. They're most certainly aware of rough sex and choking from, you know, as you mentioned, popular songs, TikTok, you know, various kinds of social media, TV shows. And so we need to be a part of the conversation with them and balance what they're seeing with more supportive, fact-based, compassionate information that expresses our care and concern and desire for them to be safe and to be safe with their friends and partners.
What do you make of the fact that this is popping up in popular culture? Euphoria is an enormously popular television show. That tune by Jack Harlow is everywhere.
It is. The Lovin' on Me song here in the U.S. was number one for 6 weeks this winter. And Euphoria was a hugely popular teen show. So where did it come from? Well, you know, we don't know exactly. I suspect if any of us had been tracking it 15 to 20 years ago, we would have seen the primary media influence initially as being pornography. But those days are long gone. And even though it's still widely available in pornography, and there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of videos online that show choking, again, it's in a pervasive media environment now. So, you know, personally, I'm not a cultural scholar, but I can't help but notice that we have seen these rises in behaviors that overwhelmingly affect girls and women, much more so than men. They affect gender diverse kids too. But, you know, they're really, really affecting girls and women being on the receiving end. And I can't help but notice that that's happening at a time when girls and women have made so many positive strides in education and jobs. And yet we do see, you know, a bit of a pushback and a backlash often in terms of, you know, women's rights and reproductive health and their autonomy over their own body.
I want to bring one more voice into this conversation. Peggy Orenstein is a journalist. She's spoken to hundreds of teens about their sex lives for her books, Boys and Sex and Girls and Sex. Peggy, good morning to you.
Hi, Nat.
You wrote a piece in the New York Times about this issue. And one of the things in that piece that you discussed was conversations that you'd had with a 16-year-old girl and a 15-year-old boy. What did they tell you?
I give talks at schools, and this was in 2020. I was somewhere where a 15-year-old boy raised his hand, and in a group of boys I was talking to, and said, why do all girls want to be choked? And I thought, huh, they do? And then in the next class, which was all girls, a girl raised her hand and said, why do guys want to choke you? And I thought, they do? And, you know, that was the first time I'd heard of it. And then I started going back to some of the kids that I've interviewed over the years and talking about it. And it turned out that, you know, that I started hearing stories. And I felt that at this point, it had gotten to a level that was so pervasive, so ubiquitous, both in pop culture and in young people's lives, that I could really make the case in a mainstream publication for saying, look, people, we got to talk about this.
What do you think is going on?
I think it's two things. One, the media has huge influence over us. I mean, we know that, right? You know, we see it in politics, we see it in everything. So if young people are getting their default sex education from porn and to a lesser extent from social media or mainstream media, and they're seeing this all the time, it's absolutely normalized. I talked to one college student and was saying that this was a rare behavior 15 years ago, and they were stunned by that. Not that it was so pervasive now, that it was so rare then. They just didn't know that. I think that there's a lack of awareness of the potential impact of it. But also, we have done such a poor job of educating our young people about sex and about relationships. And we continue to think that if we just don't talk about it, either they'll figure it out or they won't do it. And instead, what we're doing is we are leaving them to be educated by the media, by both pornography and mainstream media. And the results are not great.
So I want to hear one more time from the teenager in Vancouver. This is around the issue of expectations and sex. Have a listen.
There is a lot of pressure on girls when it comes to sex. I think that if you don't put out, then you're a prude. Or if you do, you're a slut. And it's kind of like, we can't win either way. And I think that with media, we're viewed as like objects, and it's kind of, the more you hear it, the more you like listen, and the more you consume it, the more it becomes real, and the more it becomes the norm. I think that a lot of guys don't necessarily want to do it, but I think that because of all the media we consume, I think that it's kind of this level of, oh, this is like manly of me to do this, or this is like cool.
This is manly of me to do this. Peggy, what are you hearing from teenage boys and young men?
That teenager is so wise, Matt.
Yeah.
She's amazing. She should be writing a book. There's a tendency I've noticed that people want to say like boys bad, girls good. And it's much more complicated than that. And boys, you know, of course, they're internalizing expectations. They don't necessarily want to be engaging this behavior. They might be mocked for not wanting to be called a simp or weak. And I just interviewed a boy the other day, actually, who was 20 years old, not particularly sexually experienced. We were talking about what he would do if he went into a new situation with somebody that he hoped would become a girlfriend. And he said, well, you know, porn does set the expectation that you're supposed to be, the phrase he used was over the top and forceful. And he said, so he would go into that situation and choke and pull hair because he thinks that that's what girls expect, want, and like. Though then he paused and said, but I'm not really sure they do like that.
Debbie, safe seems to be a key word here. When you contacted Peggy about your research, you said that this was life-saving information. What did you mean by that?
It is. It's life-saving information because what many young people don't know is that sexual choking or strangulation can kill people. Now, are the deaths relatively rare? They are. But aside from the potential for deaths, there's the potential for all kinds of other things, brain injury, cardiac arrest, a stroke risk that can happen hours or days or weeks or months or even years later. So you can, do damage to the carotid arteries in the neck, for example. You wouldn't know it for a long time. So the literature on strangulation is vast. And is very clear that strangulation is related to both short-term and long-term effects. And many of them are described as silent or hidden because, you don't know about these cumulative effects for a very long time. So, I've found that as a college professor and when I go around and talk about my book or talk about my research, and I have the opportunity to talk with young people and I share our research on the health effects of sexual choking, that many of the young people, especially the young women, say, I had no idea. You know, everything I've heard about this is that it's safe. They often get the information through online articles or through TikTok or through their friends or partners that as long as you just press the sides that it's safe, it's not true. And so they say, I didn't know this. No one ever told me this. They are worried, but they're grateful to get the information. And most of them say, now that I know this, this is not something I'm going to keep doing. But that is what I meant, when Peggy and I have talked about this, I think it's life-saving information and health protective information because it is something that, again, young people don't seem to know, and they should.
Well, and parents too, to your point, and back to the title of the book, Yes, Your Kid, there are a lot of parents who will hear this conversation who will be alarmed, freaked out, think, well, this couldn't possibly be my child, but then you've kind of addressed that. And they would say, I had no idea that this was going on. So how do you go about engaging your children in conversations about this when even talking about sex can be really still really, really uncomfortable and kids can shut it down?
Yeah, kids are really skilled, especially teenagers are acting like they're not listening to us, but they often are. And they're often, my college students say, so they're so grateful that their parents took the time to talk with them, even if it was just an awkward conversation on the way to soccer or ballet in the car where no one could look at each other, right? So have the conversation anyway, first and foremost.
Where no one could look at each other, I think, is kind of a key thing, right? If you're in the car, that no one's going to be embarrassed by what they're talking about.
Exactly. You don't have to make eye contact. It's kind of the classic place where sex educators recommend, you know, talk in the car. It's one place. It's not the only place. But, you know, I think we talked about the downsides about choking and other kinds of rough sex being pervasive in the media. The upside for a parent's perspective is that we now have teachable moments. Right. If your kid likes Jack Harlow, well, now you can talk about that song and ask, you know, well, what do you think about this? Like, have your friends, like, do you talk about choking? Do you know what this means? What does it mean to you? You know, if they watch Euphoria or The Idol, I mean, if you have any reason to believe they've watched pornography, you know, or they're on TikTok, ask them if they've seen these things. The hashtag choke me daddy stuff is a real thing. We published a paper where we analyzed hundreds of social media memes all about choking that are hashtagged with choke me daddy. And just as that young woman said, it's often just a catchphrase that people say, and they'll post on the internet with a picture of a hot celebrity and says hashtag choke me daddy. So you've got entree points where you can ask them, you know, what they've heard. You can say, wow, I didn't know about this, but I just heard a radio program about this today. Mm. And I think we should talk about it. And you know, so you ask what they've heard, but you also share what you think about it. You share fact-based information. I encourage parents to try, even if they're feeling really, really alarmed and panicked, understandably, try to, you know, approach them in a caring, non-judgmental, non-shaming way. They're not bad kids, but they are a reflection and a product of this moment and this culture that we're living in right now that has really normalized this. And so we want to, you know, we want to hear their perspectives. We want to share ours. We want to let them know about the health risks because, you know, kids don't usually want to hurt each other or hurt themselves. And in my experience, most of them, if given enough information, will realize that this is not a behavior that they probably want to continue engaging in.
Peggy, you said that you're worried, but you also wrote that, and I think people who understand your work over time would understand this, that you're hardly, you know, the anti-sex, wait until marriage type of message provider. What are the messages that you would want to convey to girls and to boys about this?
You know, once more, I ideally, hopefully, this is embedded in, and I think Debbie really does this beautifully in Yes, Your Kid, but it's embedded in a larger conversation that is about what sex should and can be, and encourages them to think about the role of sex and relationships and love and connection in their lives and what they want. In interviewing kids, one of the things that's really been remarkable to me is how through the course of the interview, they work those things out. And at the end, invariably, they thank me because they've never been able to have these conversations where they've been able to think about things that are hard, things that are painful, things that were pleasurable, and try to come to some sense of their own values, ideas, desires, wants, needs, and, you know, what they want to do moving forward.
I'm really glad to talk to you both about this. I think parents will be glad to have heard this conversation as well. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Debbie Herbenik is a researcher and professor at the Indiana University School of Public Health, director of the Center for Sexual Health Promotion in Indiana, and Peggy Orenstein is the author of two books about teens and sex.
How do you forget your favorite person in the world? 30 years ago, my 14-year-old brother was killed by a speeding police car. And just a week or two after he died, I started to forget him. But what if I could get my memories back? I'm Alex MacKinnon, and Sorry About the Kid is a new 4-part series about what happens when trauma and memory collide.
It felt like something was being torn out of my brain. It's just somebody just tore a piece of flesh out.
Sorry About the Kid is available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Sarah Cran is an adjunct assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Windsor, also the principal researcher and co-creator of a workshop for teen girls. It's called Flip the Script. Sarah, hello to you.
Hi, Matt.
What do you make of what you've just heard?
Yeah, I mean, I agree wholeheartedly with everything that Debbie and Peggy have just said. And, you know, it's very alarming, of course, to hear the proliferation of rough sex behaviors and choking or sexual strangulation specifically. But what I really loved about what they both said was the idea of like using this as a teachable moment. I think it creates an opportunity for us to do better for our youth.
What do you hear from girls in particular about the expectations around dating and sex?
We had some focus group studies with young girls ages 14 to 17. And what we heard, which was not surprising, is that those relationships are really driven by the needs and the desires and the interests of boys. And that the girls that I spoke to really felt constrained and unable to voice their own values, their own desires. And this was in a sexual context, but this was also just in a basic, like, hey, I actually don't want to go see that movie. I'd rather go see this movie. They were fearful of using their voice because there were consequences to them. They were going to be seen as needy or too high maintenance or too difficult. And so they weren't worth dating. And as we know, dating relationships in high school carry a lot of social capital for girls. So it puts them in a really difficult position.
And so the whole idea of flipping a script as you turn it around, what is flip the script in this context?
Mm-hmm. So Flip the Script with EAAA is the full name. It's a sexual assault resistance education program that's been specifically designed for girls and young women. So there's two versions of this program. One is for university and college-aged women, and then we've just created a version for teen girls in high school. And the program empowers girls and women with knowledge, skills, and confidence to be able to effectively defend themselves if they are in a situation where somebody is trying to cause them harm. And it does this without putting restrictions on their lives, telling them that they shouldn't be at that party or they shouldn't be going out with that person. It allows them to live freely. And it also doesn't put the responsibility on them. So it gives them the space and the permission to live their lives without guilt, but with some increased awareness and a toolbox of strategies and skills that they can use if they are presented with a situation that is sexually coercive or is leading to a sexual assault.
How do you approach topics like choking or what was defined earlier as rough sex with a teen? Mm-hmm. I mean, consent sounds like one of the things that is top of mind. Beyond that, what else is in that toolbox?
So part of our program is 3 hours of physical and verbal self-defense. This is a modified version of WENDO Women's Self-Defense, which is a Canadian feminist self-defense program. Mm-hmm. And part of that training is how to effectively get out of chokeholds. So in that context, we're talking about choking within the program through the lens of sexual assault. What can you do if you find yourself being choked by someone and you are not okay with that? There's another section of our program which is focused on healthy relationships and healthy sexuality. And so we don't explicitly talk about rough sex or choking, but it does come up. Occasionally there are questions from girls, in which case our facilitators have been trained to provide fact-based information about the activity. So really highlighting, for example, the potential harm to your body through strangulation, having loss of blood flow to the brain. And that's not to scare young people, but it is to provide them with the reality of that particular sexual activity. And then we really would reinforce the message of our program, which is that girls know themselves best. Young people, you know, should be able to trust their own instincts.
Trust your gut.
Yes, trust your gut, exactly. And make the choices that are best for you in a given situation. And we really are trying to empower girls and young women to trust their gut.
These are often the first sexual experiences that teenagers are having. If we don't take the opportunity to seize on that teachable moment, what's at stake, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, girls and women's lives, really. It's the reality of sexual strangulation is that there is the potential for loss of life. And I know that might seem, a little dramatic, but I think that's the reality of it. more generally, I think if we miss these opportunities to talk to young people and have honest, non-judgmental, non-shaming conversations with them about their sexual lives, their sexual health and well-being, we're risking setting up young people to grow into adults who don't have the necessary skills, communication skills, boundary setting skills, relationship skills to be able to navigate intimate and sexual relationships through their life. So I think it's such a critical time. Adolescence is such a critical time to have these conversations. I have two young daughters myself, and you know, I think about this a lot, and how these conversations are going to unfold. And even in my own education background and the work that I do, it's still a bit of a daunting thought to have these conversations. But I think it's essential.
Sarah, thank you for this.
Thank you, Matt.
Sarah Cran is an adjunct assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Windsor, also the principal researcher and co-creator of Flip the Script.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.